Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Friday, September 11th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Noelle Swan.
And I'm Noah Robertson.
When unthinkable terror struck New York City 19 years ago, Fire Chief Peter Gansey Jr. grabbed a hard hat and headed straight for Ground Zero. Nearly 3,000 people lost their lives in terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001, including hundreds of firefighters. Chief Gansey was among them. But his name will forever live on as a symbol of valor and sacrifice. This week, the commissioner of the New York City Fire Department announced that the James Gordon Bennett Medal, the department's highest award for bravery, will be renamed after Chief Gansey. The move is a tribute to a legendary chief who is still revered by all of us so many years after his death, the commissioner wrote in a social media post announcing the change. But it is also meant as an act of racial justice. The medal was first awarded in 1869 by publisher James Gordon Bennett to honor the firefighters who saved his home from a blaze. The medal has borne his name ever since. But in life, Bennett espoused many racist views and used his paper, the New York Herald, to spread anti-abolitionist rhetoric. This award for bravery should not be tied to someone who never served the FDNY, risked his life to save others, and who advocated for hate and slavery, the commissioner wrote. That award should be named for the chief who was leading our troops on our darkest day, a great man who gave his life overseeing the greatest rescue operation in FDNY history. Now to today's stories. Our first story. The U.S. economy really has made a lot of progress since the pandemic caused a spring nosedive, but it's also far from recovered, leaving a sharp divide between booming and struggling sectors.
One reason Congress is struggling with passing a new coronavirus relief bill is that economic recovery is operating at two speeds, forward and a sputtering neutral. In places like Montpelier, Vermont, companies like Timber Homes Vermont are booming, with demand surging for everything from its trailhead kiosks to timber-framed cabins. But down the road, businesses that aren't so geared for this era of social distancing are struggling, including a massage parlor and an art house cinema that shows independent films. So when Congress tries to craft a relief package, it has to consider which picture to look at. For those focused on signs of recovery, a Republican Senate proposal that failed to advance Thursday might have looked just fine. Extra unemployment benefits at $300 per week, half the level of the previous round of relief, and added funding for a small business loan program. For those focused on the ongoing deep downturn in certain sectors, the Democrats' much larger relief package might appear more appropriate. Could the economy recover without any stimulus? Well, that's a risky premise, according to economists. Says Daniel Zhao at job site Glassdoor, we don't want to see the recovery lag when we're still so deep in the hole. This story was reported by Laurent Belsey for The Monitor.
Alexander Lukashenko has ruled a largely static Belarus for 26 years, and his people have had little expectation of change. But a month of protest has reshaped Belarusians' vision of what their country should be.
Since the protests against President Alexander Lukashenko's contested re-election began over a month ago, Belarus has been in a state of limbo. Security forces have tried to crack down on demonstrators and opposition leaders with various approaches, to little effect. A lasting resolution may depend on Mr. Lukashenko's summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday. Though Russia is closely tied to Belarus, Mr. Putin has little love for Mr. Lukashenko, who has tended to ask much but give little to the Kremlin. Regardless of that meeting's outcome, many Belarusian protesters say that a month of struggle against Mr. Lukashenko's regime has cleared their minds and changed their perceptions of what they will and won't accept in future. Whatever happens next, they say, Belarusian society has crossed into new territory, says Ksenia Turchina, a leader of the Student Strike Committee at Belarusian State University in Minsk. We have grown up as a nation. We have seen a real civil society starting to emerge with people organizing in ways they never did. Belarus may change for better or worse, but it will never be the same again, she says. This story was reported by Fred Weir and Tatiana Shuntova in Moscow and Minsk, Belarus, for The Monitor.
An online movement reflects a growing acknowledgement that the scientific study of the Earth and all of its diversity ought to reflect the diversity of the people who live on it.
Growing up in Nelson Mandela's South Africa, Sandra Boitumelo Fuma never considered becoming a scientist. When I saw scientists, I saw Einstein. I saw white people, she says. Today, however, Ms. Fuma is on the cusp of finishing her doctorate in microbial ecology. I am aware that I am occupying a space that never had me in mind. Scientists work every day with incredibly complex ideas, but we struggle to understand more basic ones like race and power, she says. Many observers argue it is particularly important to have scientists of color in the earth sciences, for around the world, communities of color stand on the front lines of the climate crisis and other environmental emergencies. This week, thousands of Black geoscientists like Ms. Fuma gathered online for the first Black in Geoscience Week, part of a larger movement to highlight the work of Black people working in the natural sciences. Says Munira Raji, a Nigerian-British geologist at Durham University who helped organize the program, growing up, most of us didn't have role models to look up to. Now that we're in the position to be the role models, we want to do something to encourage the next generation. This story was reported by Ryan Lenore Brown in Johannesburg for The Monitor.
Climate change has long been understood to have strong socioeconomic implications. With Arab world temperature records being shattered this late summer, access to cooling is being seen less as a luxury issue.
Seeming desperate one morning, Khaled, an accountant, searches an electronics store in Amman that has been emptied of air conditioners, despite sticker prices of up to 1 month's salary. We have held out for years, but our children can't study or sleep with the heat, he says. With temperature records being shattered around the Middle East, Arab societies are being divided into AC haves and have-nots. In August, Baghdad hit 125.2 degrees Fahrenheit. This month, Jordan counted 13 days of 105-degree-plus temperatures, its longest recorded heat wave. Builders and rapidly growing cities have discarded traditional construction methods that kept homes cool even in summer. And experts say the interiors of 75% of Jordanian homes are above the comfort range. When you are inside the apartment or bedroom in Amman, it is as if you are out on the streets, says Mohammed Tani of the Jordan Smart Cities Council. But it's not just the price of the AC units. It's the cost of the electricity that keeps them out of reach for many. I can't afford $170 a month for electricity to run an air conditioner, says Yazid Diafala. I am going to choose putting food on the table over comfort every time, he says. This story was reported by Taylor Luck and Amon Jordan for The Monitor.
What does it take to tell the story of someone's life well? Film critic Peter Rayner uses the occasion of a new biopic about 1970s singer Helen Reddy to look at some of his top choices for movies about singer-performers. You can find his picks in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary on resilience from the Monitor's editorial board. The residents of Paradise are on the run again this week. The California town became well known in 2018 after a wildfire killed at least 85 people. Now, many in the mountain town, which has been partially rebuilt, are fleeing during the state's severest wildfire season on record. Paradise, of course, is more prepared this time in material ways, such as better fire-resistant houses and reconfigured streets. Yet its spirit of resiliency and community bonds are also on display. "I feel a calm resolve, like I'm not going to let this fire win," says Lauren Gill, the outgoing town manager. The town's tragedy, the deadliest fire in California's history, turned out to be an opportunity for Paradise to forge lessons far beyond those of better fire prevention and the need to live outside fire-prone areas. Being open to finding the right lessons in a disaster is the first step, and the people of Paradise are probably still as open as anyone to the opportunity to grow in the face of trauma. Calm before a firestorm helps bring calm after a firestorm. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us this week. Come back Monday when Simon Montlake will explore the toll that the pandemic has taken on nursing homes and what lessons might be gleaned from those losses. When crisis or danger emerges, and even when things seem to be going just fine, today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective columnist thinks it's worth considering what it means that God made us fearless, strong, and safe. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Noah Robertson.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2020.